Well, thank you very much, Andrew. I'm Rob Solly. I'm head of the Defence and Security Analysis Division of DSDL. Within DSDL, we support the MOD, but also about 40 other government departments and agencies in the security space. I'm going to talk about putting wargaming back at the heart of our work. And I'll just introduce the talk by saying a little bit about who we are. I'm head of this Defence and Security Analysis Division, one of five divisions within DSDL. But basically, I'm responsible for our analysis capability and our human science capability. And I run a set of programs, one of which also covers innovation work across the whole of the lab. I'm not going to say any more about org charts or organizations, don't worry. So what tools do we use and what methods do we have? I have about 600 people, and they use a wide variety of tools and techniques. They come from a huge variety of disciplines. I have a lot of human scientists, psychologists, physiologists, crime scientists. Actually, I found working with them as an analyst incredibly useful because I spent most of my career trying to advise people how to make decisions better. These guys know about how decisions are made, or at least the theories about how decisions are made, and I've had to change quite a few of my views about what's an effective use of analysis as a result of working with them, and I'll talk about that as we go through the talk. Our guys also develop intelligence analysis techniques, and we have some fantastic statistical experts who will draw together data and tell us whether it's valid or not, and I'll talk about some of that later as well. At the other end of the spectrum, we use what I would call problem structuring methods, or some people call soft operational research techniques or soft operational analysis techniques. These are actually very similar to the BOGSAT approach that we've heard about today, but often their power is in getting people who have a little bit of a view of the problem to come together. They all have different views, and their perspectives can be knitted together to form a better model of the system that they're dealing with. These guys also use futures and horizon scanning techniques and develop our scenarios. And then we analyse those scenarios. We heard from Todd about the US scenarios, but we have a similar set, and we use wargaming, historical analysis or simulation and other techniques like that to assess how effective our forces might be in those scenarios in the future. We also look at higher-level issues through systems engineering analysis, capability analysis, looking across a whole set of different capabilities and how well we perform, and then we allocate the money that defence has, and as you can guess, there's never quite enough money to go around, so we have to make difficult choices about where best to invest that money to achieve the most effect. So, as you can see, a wide range of skills and techniques. So why does wargaming come into that? Where does it play its part? Well, I thought I'd just take you through a little bit of a journey about how the analysis techniques that we have used over our history have evolved and almost come back full circle to where we started. I'm going to use contemporary examples, but actually a lot of our work started in the 40s with operational research in the Second World War. People having necessarily to use quite fast, quick turnaround, simple techniques to solve urgent operational problems. There was no time to have a massive, complex computer model. They had to do something elegant and simple, often involving people. Sometimes they were lucky enough to rely upon equations to solve their problems. As we moved into the 60s and 70s and 80s, we stopped worrying about urgent problems. At least we didn't worry quite as much about those, and we had plenty of time to work out what the best thing we should buy in 20 years was. And when you've got 20 years to spare, you've got plenty of time to invest in big models, complicated simulations, and to really look at things in detail. And we spent a lot of our time doing that, and we still are to some extent doing that. But as you then come to boiling all the findings of those big models down and advising ministers, for instance, on what they should do, suddenly all these messy problems start to come back to the surface. Like, it's not just about how cost-effective something is, it's about who's going to build it and what's the risk that if they go out of business, we won't be able to buy any replacements, or how serviceable will it be, or how will I be able to provide people with the training or the morale to use this? And these issues are much more messy and human-centred, and we've resolved going back to techniques like multi-criteria decision analysis, for instance, for trying to pull together assessments of all these complex factors. And more recently, and in fact just going on in the last couple of weeks, we've been working as part of the Strategic Defence and Security Review to help our senior leaders in the Ministry of Defence, including the Secretary of State, to understand what might be the effect of different strategies. And this kind of approach means going back to wargaming, although I think I should call it seminar gaming, because it didn't have an active adversary in the way we've played it. But the idea is that actually when you come back to some of these really high-level complex issues, you have to move away from the detail of the models that we had the luxury of using in the past. So I'm going to give you three reasons why I think we have renewed our interest in wargaming. We never actually stopped. There's a good chunk of my staff in the audience who have always been interested in wargaming, and maybe it's just that I've noticed, but we have, as an organisation, renewed our interest in wargaming. In fact, I should just pay due to, for instance, Todd Corderer, who was doing exactly the same thing in, as I am now, talking about the benefits of wargaming, but in Johns Hopkins University about 3 years ago. Howard Bodie, who got me to pay for one of our most successful war games when I was a customer about 10 years ago, but also a whole range of our other staff in the audience. We talked earlier about the cart and the horse. I was in the cart, and now I'm helping pull it up the hill. So I've joined you at last. So the first of these three issues, I would say, is that we have got a lot of... Well, I struggle to find a simple problem in defence. There are problems that people describe as simple, but that's because they've simplified them to the extent that they've left out anything that was difficult to analyse. For me, almost every problem is complex, and I'll talk a bit about what that means. But if a problem is complex, actually, it's not really amenable to optimization or simple mathematical solutions, unless it's under very very specific circumstances. And to explain that, I'll use a framework called the Kinevin framework, which Dave Snowden has proposed. There are more details about his paper at the bottom of his slide if you want to look online. But basically, he categorises problems as being either obvious, he used to call this simple, obvious or complicated or complex or chaotic. And you can kind of guess that, you know, obvious problems are actually, you know the answer, you just have to recognise that it's one of these systems, one of these problems, I'll use this solution. Or you can use a checklist to get your way through that. If you've got a complicated problem, then you have to use a different way of responding to it. And this is, he calls it sense, analyze, respond. And this is effectively the scientific method. We measure, we try and make sense, and then we act and modify our original assumptions. And so this is what the kind of analytical approach that most of my staff, and including myself, have been using for many years. We've been applying a simple sort of scientific method to problems. And when some of our problems are amenable to that, but increasingly I think the problems that we're being asked to deal with are in this complex space now, where the best solution is not to go and do a huge study. It's actually to try stuff out, experiment, learn from your failures. And Dave Snowden talks about, you know, probe, then sense, and respond. And to do that, you really want to do it in a safe-to-fail environment. You don't want to go to war with China to see what would happen. Probably not a good idea. So an exploratory approach is needed and in a safe-to-fail environment. And then there's quite a few of these problems as well, chaotic problems, where, to be honest, none of us really knows how you should deal with them other than good luck and use your intuition. And I think we must be cognizant of the fact that there are many problems that we just don't really have a hope of solving. We can help people understand the risks, but that's probably the limitations of our brain power. So I would say, you know, because we're getting, we're cognizant of a larger number of these complex problems, wargaming actually is a tool that could allow us to experiment in a safe-to-fail environment. The second point perhaps is more important, though, which is that I've spent most of my career trying to do an analysis myself and then tell people about what I've learned. And that's been a fantastic job. It's been really interesting. But the trouble is, my customers haven't been on that learning journey with me. They haven't experienced what I've experienced, and so when I tell them what I've learned, it's not kind of as interesting to them. Maybe I should improve my storytelling style or something, but actually they haven't experienced it, so they haven't learned it. And surely it would be better in some circumstances to help a customer to learn themselves rather than for us to learn and then teach them. And just as a sort of way of explaining this, this is a diagram that we use to explain three large categories of our work. We either develop planning methods and tools, or we use those to build understanding about how to design something better, or we work with a customer or decision maker to help them make an informed decision. But the way we talk about this is often about, and this is a diagram I've used in the past, I put this together a few years ago, it's all about us developing knowledge and then transferring it to people. And the words I use are, we should learn, then we should teach, and perhaps we should guide a customer through a decision-making process. I'm beginning to ask myself whether this is right for some of the problems we deal with. I think in many cases the best way is to get the customer to learn, and we facilitate that. We aren't analysts, we're facilitators. And that's kind of hard to swallow when your job has been doing really interesting analysis locked away in a room. We actually need to spend a lot more time helping other people to learn, to teach them effectively, or to help them to learn themselves. The third reason that I think we need to re-embrace wargaming is that a lot of what we've done in the past and analytically has been to help people make choices between options they already had. It's helping them narrow down a problem. But in many cases, actually, I think I would contend that we need to open our customers' minds to the fact that something else might be out there, whether that's a different solution to their problem or actually a different problem that's perhaps more important than the one they're worrying about now. So to me, that means we need to look at ways of helping people to think divergently rather than convergently. And I've got a couple of slides that show this process. So this is a process that the Design Council of the UK put together, and this is describing the design process as they talk about it. But effectively, you can see it, they call it a double diamond, and it starts with, first of all, divergent thinking, to think about what is the problem, what kind of problems might I need to solve, to diagnose the problem, and then to narrow down and define the actual problem that you're going to solve, the requirement, as it were. And then, again, to be divergent in your thinking and to try and work out how best you might achieve a solution to that problem, and then to narrow down again and say, well, which of those solutions is the best one to implement and to get on and do it. So this is a two-step process of where each step involves divergent thinking and then convergent thinking. And yet I would contend that most of the work we get given is in the convergent thinking type of mode. We don't do enough of the divergent thinking. Just to say, this isn't just the Design Council. This is Nightworks' chart. This is from Chris Jordan. Thank you, Chris, who's in the audience today. But basically, from the Nightworks way, exactly the same double diamond process, just drawn from top to bottom instead of left to right. And it doesn't look like a double diamond, but this is the government's policy cycle, which basically says the same thing. Figure out what it is you're trying to achieve. Think of some alternatives. Narrow it down to which one you're going to actually try and make as your objective, then figure out some options and then appraise them, and then implement and work out if it's the right thing to do in the first place. So this is a pretty common way of thinking, but we tend to focus on the last stage of this, the appraisal stage, which is basically saying, should I buy X, Y, or Z? So I think wargaming is a really useful tool for divergent thinking. And we heard a lot about innovation earlier as well. It's a very valuable tool for innovation because it can help people to do something that was unexpected. And we heard that from a speaker this morning. It's hard to script that kind of stuff into a computer simulation. But it's not the only tool that you can use for divergent thinking. I mean, simple brainstorming is pretty good at this. Red teaming we heard about as well. But there are other techniques that you can use in the space. These are the ones that I talked about earlier, where we typically get engaged with helping people choose between options, decision analysis or cost effectiveness analysis, but also using simulations to test a plan as opposed to generate ideas about a plan. But I just want to put in a good word also for problem structuring methods. We've got Marvel here, system dynamics tool. There are other tools like system dynamics, for instance, soft systems methodology, that you can use to bring together a group with different perspectives on a problem to help build a simple model, and then that could just be a diagram, that model, it doesn't have to be a simulation, and then use that model to help build understanding. And so there are a range of techniques out there, but I think wargaming does bring something, in particular the adversarial nature of its approach, that the others on this list don't. Why is that important for us? Well, I mean, in defence, our job is about preparing for the unexpected. And it's really important that we don't spend all our time preparing for the scenario that took 5 years to write that everyone understands and is almost certainly not going to happen. We need to prepare for lots of things, and the adversarial nature of warfare, of a war game, is, I think, exceptional in allowing people to face the unexpected and the difficult consequences of it. It's also important because I think you'll see coming out of our defence review this year a renewed focus on innovation. And I think But the main point for me is that policymakers or decision makers, luckily, aren't constantly placed in the situations that we want them to act in, which, you know, it might take, might be once in 100 years that they have to, for instance, go to war with China. We don't want, they're not going to have the experience of fighting that kind of a situation unless we give them that experience in a virtual environment. So we need to expand their experience through some kind of simulation, and in my mind, a nice, cheap, and effective simulation is found in wargaming. I think I've talked about some of the issues, the other issues on here already, so I'll skip on. So what do we use wargaming for? Well, this is a slide I stole from the briefing pack. It's not just about training our decision makers, and it's not just about decision support. It's a mixture of both. And I've just got a few examples of how we have been using wargames over the last few years. You may have heard of some of these from previous conferences or speakers. Probably the best known, and it's up in the top left, is our work with ISAF in Afghanistan using the POSSUM tool, but basically testing the campaign plan for 2011 and then for the withdrawal, and leading to quite significant changes in elements of that plan. But we also do that for potential wars, and I can't tell you about the specifics, but you can think of a potential conflict that we might get involved in, and we've been working on it, helping our planners to think about what might happen as opposed to what they expect to happen. And there is a big difference. And wargaming is one of the tools that we've been using, but I think this is some of our most valuable work. One of the main uses you hear about with wargaming is force development and training. We're doing a lot of work now with the Army in particular, and you'll see some of the games that have been developed later on today. I talked earlier about working with ministers on national strategy. You know, my aspiration is that in the next Strategic Defence and Security Review, or perhaps in the run-up to it, we would have a series of war games where they experience in a virtual environment, and I don't mean in some computer system, I mean around a table, the implications of the policy they've just decided was their most cost-effective. And so they learn about the risks of doing so. But we've been doing a lot of work that you could call training, but actually helping our policymakers to understand the effects of infrequent threats, I've called them here. So, for instance, we're working with the government chief scientific advisor and his colleagues to help them understand the risks associated with a day without space. So, you know, there's been a solar flare, we've lost all of our space capabilities. What does that mean as a risk to the country? Again, I'm not sure this counts as a war game. It's probably more a seminar game. But in my mind, these are valuable experiences for helping people to understand the risks that they are managing to prepare them for doing their job better, as it were. Just to say that we are trying to capitalise on the work that has been going on by bringing it together into a centralised hub. And I'm indebted, really, to Colin Marston, who's in the audience somewhere, who's been a lot, you know, put a lot of energy into this and has done a good job persuading me of its value. So we have a wargaming team that's being set up, which will cover not all of our wargamers, but it will cover people who have expertise in wargaming techniques from strategic level games all the way down to tactical, and from simulation with a lot of computer support through to basic manual tabletop games. We'll be drawing all of those people together so that they will be the obvious focus for working with people in industry or academia, and our overseas partners. And I also have a set of groups on the left-hand side of this chart who are focused on our customers and users who will be effectively finding the opportunities to use gaming. And I want to just remind you that it's not just about military operations. I see a very strong role for wargaming to support the development of policy across government. So we're basically drawing those people together into a hub, and basically, I'd just like to say we're kind of open for offers for collaboration. We believe very strongly that we aren't the world experts on this. We want to learn from those of you who are, and we want to work with you. So we see quite a lot of opportunities in this space. I think that we could be using these techniques to be training people. We've seen some of the American memos. There are similar thoughts going around in the Ministry of Defence, and I'm trying to push home the same message. But I think there are real opportunities to train our decision makers and policy makers to work with people in new areas of policy. There's a whole untapped space in the area of personnel policy we haven't really looked at. And as I said earlier, there's this renewed focus on innovation in the MOD, that will require us to have this kind of way of thinking. So in summary, we're investing in this. We're open to offers for collaboration. Judith Rawl is in the audience. She is the technical lead for our new analysis support construct. So if you're a small, medium-sized enterprise, or if you're from academia, please talk to Judith, if you haven't already, about getting engaged with us through the analysis support construct. That's our main contracting mechanism in this space. But also, we're open to offers to collaborate with our cross-government or international partners. That's it from me. Thank you.